Welcome everyone to the next episode of Two Men and a Bible Fighting the Cosmic Battle. And as we pointed out last time, Bob, you know, it's not just the two of us. It's actually a whole world fighting the cosmic battle. But that's the title to our podcast, and it's something that both of us believe firmly in.
How often are we fighting that battle, Jim?
Daily.
All right.
And night, day, sleep,
24/7.
And really, you know, Bob, in just from my own experience, you don't recognize you're in the battle until you know you're in the battle.
Yeah, that's right. And our weapons are in Ephesians 6, but one way to summarize that is humility, wisdom, faithfulness.
Humility is huge.
That's right.
Huge.
That's right. Have you ever met a humble person you didn't like?
Not one.
Me neither.
Not one. And I think it talks about humility over and over and over in what we refer to as the truth, which is the Bible. And it does. It talks about humility. And I know in my life, Bob, I've traveled several paths. But the path of humility has been the most fulfilling path that I've ever traveled. Because understanding that we are not God, and we are not all-powerful, and that we are human, and then especially when you understand Genesis 3 and know what kind of human we are, it brings things into a whole new perspective, which, you know, really, I think, rings home the importance for this podcast that we're doing.
And in addition to that, when you consider the other person more important than yourself, and they recognize that, and it elevates them, and they elevate you for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they realize your value, that they have come to that realization, and it opens their eyes to the Lord. So humility,
which is a promise that God makes us, right? With humility.
In what sense? What do we?
Well, the fact that when you are humble, people recognize that in you. That.
Yeah, and I don't know a specific verse for that, but it's a general biblical truth.
Yes. Oh, yes,
right.
Yes.
That's right. That'd be a huge takeaway from the scriptures, and I'm sure we could come up with 100 verses to buttress that fact. But
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right.
The Beatitudes, the meek shall inherit
the meek, earth. The meek is a close synonym of humble. That's right. In fact, when we get there, Jamie, at the end of the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, all written by Moses, it says that Moses was more humble than any man. And you don't necessarily pick that up when you're reading those first five books, but there it is, God's own assessment that he was the most humble. And it also was a characteristic of David, as epitomized by his recognition of his sin with Bathsheba when he's confronted by Nathan the prophet. His humility shines very bright.
Well, as we look at today's verses, being a father, I got to tell you, Bob, today's verses
were
hard to
read.
Yeah, it's hard to read. It really is.
Yeah, when you realize the magnitude of what God is saying to Abraham and commanding him, asking of him. That's right.
And the faithfulness of Abraham. Again, I know I have brought this up over and over probably the last five episodes, Bob, but I cannot stop talking about Abraham's faithfulness.
One way to say it is, if I had to pick, an earthly family to belong to. And Abraham was one of my choices. I'd take Abraham.
I'd be in there.
Yep. Yeah, that's right.
I'd wear the uniform, whatever needed to happen to be on that team. But it's, you know, I guess I would challenge each one of our listeners today to put themselves in Abraham's shoes, and what would you have done?
That's right, and that's also one of the characteristics of narrative literature, and the value of it is you put yourself, naturally, as a reader. Say you're reading some spy novel. You're putting yourself in place of the main spy, right? Or one of the other characters. You're thinking, you know, what would I do? So it's very natural as a reader of narrative literature to put yourself in place of the main character. So we ask every reader or listener to us on this podcast, put yourself in Abraham's place.
And how would you have...
What would you do?
How would you have handled it?
Yeah.
And, you know, just...
Let me ask you this, Jamie.
Yes,
before
sir.
We even... This he's going to offer his child here. His only child.
After 100 years.
The heir of the promise. That, you know, this kid's everything. In a sense, you don't want to minimize any child's life, but this is the epitome of a child. What would you do if God said to sacrifice that child? What would you do?
It'd have been tough, Bob. It'd have been tough. You would have to go with it. But I cannot tell you it would have been an easy decision. It would have been hard. But yes, you have to go with it. But it would not have been easy, you know, to sacrifice.
But if you go with it, I know I'm pressing you here.
Right,
this is not where we wanted to go. But if you go with it, why would you go with it?
I believe God.
Then why would you do that reluctantly?
Great question.
You know, is it like 51 to 49 I'm going to go with? If you're going to go with it, it has to be 100. I mean, there's no way I'm taking Sophia. If that's a 51 to 49 decision, I'm not doing it.
Right.
If it's a 100 to 0 decision, I'll do it. And what is the only 100 compared to something as dear to you as your child? God.
It would still be a tough, tough, tough decision.
But it's 100
to
nothing.
I don't envy Abraham.
I'm glad
I'm not in the same position.
All right, say we're, you know, my background is swimming and coaching as much as individually swimming, and you're my star swimmer. And we're in the Olympics, and I'm telling you how to do this. And you're shaking your head going, man, I don't know. And I'm going, I know. Do what I'm telling you to do.
Well, I think it definitely, Bob, comes back to what we've been talking about the last several podcasts. It's faith. And it would be a hard, hard, hard decision. I would go with God, but it would not be easy for me. I'll be honest. As a father with my sons, I have three. It would be difficult. And so that's...
I understand what you're saying, but I'm going to push my point even further.
Okay.
To me, you know, imagine it as you've got your poker chips. And part of those chips are your children and your wife and so on. How many of those chips do you have out on the table in relationship to God?
All of them.
Then it's 100 to 0, isn't it? Every chip is out there.
But it's still a hard decision. It really is.
No, we gotta clarify this. It's intense.
Okay.
Because
okay.
The stakes are so high. But it's not hard.
Very intense.
Okay.
Very intense.
But it's not hard. Right?
Mm-hmm.
God said. And by the way...
Because Abraham knows God. He's
talked to him personally. He knows God.
Right. Now, I guess if you, in a sense, not if you throw that in, because God knows us, we know God. But when, with that, you know, they say hindsight is 20/20. With that hindsight, I could absolutely say, yeah. But I've got to be honest, Bob, it would be tough if I was in Abraham's position.
It would be intense.
Intense. It would be extremely intense.
But think about
this. But he doesn't waver.
No, he doesn't. And think about this in terms of the intensity. If he asked for your own life, wouldn't that be easier?
Yes.
Abraham's 100.
Yes.
Okay, God, I'll, you know, yeah, I pretty much live my life anyway. But your kid's life? Ooh.
Tough. Tough.
No. We're going to get this right.
Intense. Okay. Intense.
Intense. The stakes.
Extremely intense.
All right, the stakes are high. Mm-hmm. So, let's read our passage. This is Genesis 22. Now it came about, after these things, that God tested Abraham. And he said to him, Abraham, and he said, here I am. He said, take now your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains on which I'll tell you. So Abraham rose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, took two of his young men with him, and Isaac, his son. And he split wood for the burnt offering, and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. And on the third day, Abraham raised his eyes, saw the place from a distance. Abraham said to his young men, stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go over there. We will worship and return to you. Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son, and he took in his hand the fire and the knife. So the two of them walked on together. Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, my father. And he said, here I am, my son. And he said, behold, the fire and the wood, but where's the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham said, God will provide for himself the lamb for the burnt offering, my son. So the two of them walked on together. Then they came to the place of which God had told him. And Abraham built the altar there and arranged the wood and bound his son Isaac, laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven, said, Abraham, Abraham. He said, here I am. He said, do not stretch out your hand against the lad. Do nothing to him. For now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. Then Abraham raised his eyes and looked. Behold, behind him a ram caught in a thicket by his horns. Abraham went and took the ram and offered him up for burnt offering in the place of his son. Abraham called the name of that place, the Lord will provide, as it is said to this day, in the mount of the Lord it will be provided. Then the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time from heaven and said, by myself I have sworn, declares the Lord, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, indeed, I will greatly bless you. I will greatly multiply your seed as the stars of the heavens, and as the sand which is on the seashore. Your seed shall possess the gate of their enemies. In your seed, all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice. So Abraham returned to his young men. They arose and went together to Beersheba, and Abraham lived at Beersheba. Now it came about after these things that it was told Abraham, saying, behold, Milcah also has borne children to your brother Nahor, who is his firstborn, and Booz his father, his brother. and Kemuel, the father of Aram, and Heset, and Hazo, and Pildash, and Jidlaf, and Bethuel. Bethuel became the father of Rebekah. These eight Milcah bore to Nahor, Abraham's brother. His concubine, whose name was Rumah, also bore Teba, and Gaham, and Tahash, and Ma'akah. Hey, before we... That's the end. Wait, before... All right, way to go.
Golf clap.
All right. Before, on that last little passage, when it says, in verse 23, Bethuel became the father of... Wait a sec. It says the number.
These eight.
Yeah, where is... Yeah, in verse 23. Bethuel became the father of Rebekah, these eight. Then how many do you get in the next verse?
One,
two,
three, four.
Four. What's that? Eight and four?
12.
12.
Interesting.
There you go. We'll come back to that later.
I understand.
I don't want to go by that now.
I'm getting there.
All right.
Completion.
That's right.
It's a complete family number.
All right. We'll come back to that. But
all right.
Not on today's podcast. But
okay. Always best to start at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say that in The Wizard of Oz, and you know, we talk about The Wizard of Oz a lot because of the, you know,
apocalyptic imagery.
Right.
Yeah, that's right, with the wizard, you know, when they pull the drapes back.
So, here I am, right?
Yeah.
Is there any... Am I reading too much? Am I getting too...
Perhaps, because that's stereotypical for, in the ancient Near East, your response to the deity.
Okay.
So, that's like you picking up the phone. Yeah, this is Jamie.
That's so it's not necessarily like God and Adam, you know, where are you?
There might be an element of that, though. There might be an element of that, Jamie, in that... what Abraham's response to God was to, or excuse me, Adam's response was to hide,
right,
after the fall, right?
And Abraham said,
"Yeah, Abraham's raising his hand. I'm right here." So, in retrospect, I'd give you a lot more points for that than I thought. Well, that probably is an element of that. It is stereotypical of the response to a vision, but I think you're probably on the right track. There's a lot of faithfulness.
Yeah, here I am.
Right off the bat, he's raising his hand. Here I am.
Now...
That's right.
I think all of us, you, I, our listeners, really need to take what happens next and really think about it. What would we have done, as we were talking about earlier? You know, tough call, right?
No. I'm telling you again.
I mean, are we...
You'd have done it. Do you believe God?
Intense
call. I'm not
going to
let you off the hook.
Intense call. Absolutely. I believe God.
Okay. Then you would have done it, right? Because this is really the point I want to make. Abraham understands the significance of what he's being asked.
Mm-hmm.
It says later in the book of Hebrews that what was going through his mind, it doesn't say it in Genesis. Moses doesn't let you know. You have to wait till the New Testament refers to this event. And it says what Abraham was thinking. Okay? And what Abraham is thinking is, according to God in the New Testament, is, I know this is the kid.
Yeah.
He's the kid of the bad. It's so evident.
He promised.
You know, I was 100.
Right.
And then he came. So I know this is the kid. So if God's asking me to sacrifice him, he must be going to raise him from the dead. That's what Abraham was thinking. Okay, well, that's not in this text.
Right.
That's what he's thinking. What does Moses actually show you about what he's thinking? You don't know, other than... He doesn't argue.
Faithfulness.
He does not argue.
Well, and I think I get that more and more in Genesis, is the understanding, the growth of faith, you know, as it goes from Adam and Eve to Noah, to now Abraham.
Mm.
The faith gets stronger.
Well, that's a great observation. Because all of those guys were really good. And yeah, Abraham is the king of all of them.
Yeah. If we were to take those three, if we were to take those three pictures,
You know, hey, build the boats. Hey, Noah, build it. A little weird, you know. Okay. It's going to rain. We've never had rain on Earth. Okay. People are making fun of me. Okay. But it wasn't Noah, sacrifice your son.
Right.
That's an even bigger step.
It's a big step, and is intense. Very intense.
There you go.
I don't know how I would have dealt with it, Bob.
And I'm not going to let you back up.
You're not going to let me?
No, I know how you would have done it.
Yes, you're right. But
God said. I say this all the time to my own daughter. Sophia, who do you belong to? And she knows to say God. Right? And it's not she knows that, like I spank her if she doesn't, but she just knows that to be true. And within that paradigm, my place with her grows even more, right? She sees me as placed there by God, but she sees a power bigger than me, much bigger. I mean, I represent that power to her, the way God has designed it, but God, she's related to God. Imagine the strength that gives her as compared to just being related to me. She's related to God.
Well, that just brought up another important point, Bob. You know, as parents.
Yeah, what's the best thing you could do for your kids?
Right.
They belong to God.
Right.
You're the parent. You represent God to them. But God's a lot bigger.
But what if we don't show them that? What if we don't educate him that way? What if we don't show him the truth? It's going to be a swing and a miss, right?
You mean what if we fail in our responsibilities as parents?
As a parent, not us, but
world's failed its children. Yeah, that's right.
What happens?
Well, I mean, the way you're asking that question, I mean, the devil's their father. And
absolutely.
He has been. And
but that goes to the cosmic battle. You know?
Yeah, that's right.
It really, you know, maybe...
Yeah. So imagine, I guess we could imagine it this way. Let's pick our major city, say New York City. And you're walking down the street. And you're feeling abandoned. And this guy comes up and promises you the world, puts his arm around you, calls you son. And it's the devil. And that's the picture with most people. They don't even know that. They just know they've been promised the world.
Mm-hmm.
They don't realize who that's coming from. But imagine the other side of the coin. Imagine a guy walking down the street with God coming up to him.
Well, and it's almost... How do I describe what I'm seeing here? It's... the actual transverse of what we're talking about. You know, God talking here about, you know, here, make this sacrifice to me that shows your faithfulness. And then the other side is, hey, you don't have to make a sacrifice.
Right. Yeah, you can imagine the devil whispering, whoa, whoa, whoa. Oh, that's out of bounds, man.
Dude.
What are you thinking? That's right.
Yeah. And there's no sacrifice made, but there is an allegiance pledged.
Yeah. Let's read some of these words again. This is the very beginning of chapter 22. Now, it came about after these things that God tested Abraham.
Tested.
Okay, let's pause there. What are the three attributes of God that we often discuss?
Holiness.
Okay, that's number one. That's the trial.
Omnipotence.
Yep.
Omniscience.
Okay, now, if he's omniscient, Why does he need to test somebody? He knows.
Because they're not omniscient.
Okay. So the test is for Abraham. It's not for God. God already knows. Right? He's omniscient.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He knows your grade before you take the test. So he's not testing for knowledge. And the test in one sense is for Abraham. Who else is the test for?
The dude.
Who wasn't in the book of Job. Who's,
that's right.
God already knows.
Right.
Who doesn't know? Who, in fact, who thinks he knows the opposite? Right? Who's up there before God saying, that's your guy? Abraham's your guy that's been lying about Sarah?
Mm-hmm.
And God says, in that imaginary scenario, though I don't think it's all that
yes.
imaginary, God's saying, yes, that is my guy. You want to see? Mm-hmm. And the devil's saying, yeah, let's see. Okay, the devil's saying, I'm going to pitch one, you know, on the outside corner, mm-hmm. low and away, but mm-hmm. it'll be barely in the strike zone. I'm going to pitch it 100 miles an hour. We'll see if this guy can hit it. And he hits it out of the park.
Yeah.
And there's God standing there going, I told you, there's some people that really do believe.
Well, and
that's what's really going. The test,
and it's trusting
the
God.
The test is not for God. He already knows.
Yep. Test
the
is
test
Abraham.
Is for the other guys in the courtroom.
Mm-hmm.
Abraham, who doesn't even know he's in the courtroom, and
mm-hmm.
Satan.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say that explicitly in the text, but is that...
I get the feeling.
If you've been reading from the beginning,
mm-hmm.
is that not the issue? God's omniscient. The test is not for him. He already knows.
Now, something that I found interesting, Bob, is that it wasn't God that said, hey, Abraham, stop. It was an angel of God.
Okay. And what was interesting to you about that?
That God didn't show up.
Okay. See, to me, I read those as the same. Because when it describes God as showing up with Sodom and Gomorrah,
mm-hmm.
it described him as an angel.
With two others.
With two others. But I think that reference is, the point of that part of the text is not to be one step removed.
Gotcha, okay.
I think that's...
That was
that's,
my question. So
yeah,
it's a,
that's
a,
to show God's direct involvement.
It's a cherub. In a sense, is that what we call
I wouldn't
particular
even,
angel,
I don't think
or?
You go down that path. I think the path you go down is, that's God.
Okay.
Okay. Now, think about this chapter in light of the 2,000 pages of the Bible. Because somebody
yeah.
is going to sacrifice his son. He wouldn't let Abraham do it. But he's going to do it.
Wow. Wow.
Isn't
wow,
that what's going
wow.
on?
No, I didn't even get that, Bob.
Oh, that's what's
I,
going on.
I missed
this
the
is,
whole thing.
He's, God himself is going to do that. Right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. He's not asking Abraham to do something he himself wouldn't do. And he's going to prevent Abraham from doing it.
And
wait,
it's
going to
be a couple of thousand years
yeah,
before that actually
that's
comes
right.
to
and Abraham, no. I'll take care of this. I see where you are. I'm going to do this. That's what's really going on. This is probably the biggest, for that reason, as big as any chapter in the Bible.
I missed the whole thing on that, Bob. I missed the whole, I'll be perfectly honest, I missed that whole connection. But yes,
well,
I see it.
Oh, yeah.
I see it
and
plainly.
See, what were you thinking through this whole chapter, right? We talked about it last
mm-hmm.
podcast
mm-hmm.
and this one. You know, you're struggling with this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I keep pushing your hand,
mm-hmm.
you know. Yeah, Jamie, you would, but okay, extremely intense. And so, see, you're not seeing this chapter through the eyes of Isaac.
Right.
You're seeing it through Abraham's eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so when you get to Jesus on the cross, don't look at that through Jesus' eyes. Think of what that cost God the Father. Right? We had
Bob,
a,
that That's life changing.
In other words, it's not who is. Though I don't want to minimize this in any way, because God's a triunity. Jesus is God, but so I don't. It's the issue is not who is Jesus that he went to the cross. It's who is God that he sent Jesus to the cross.
His son.
Because he could have stopped that. You know, in other words, like I said before, I might die for Sophia. Honestly, mm-hmm. I could say that.
Yeah,
if there was a car coming,
I could
get in the way and get her out of the way. I could see myself making that decision. But I could not see putting her in the way of that car to spare some other person. I couldn't do that. God did that.
Wow. So there is a, not an echo, but a foreshadowing.
Right
here.
Which is what the entire Old Testament is.
From this point on.
The whole thing, even from the beginning, the whole thing is about Jesus. He says that in Luke, right? He says to the disciples on the road to Emmaus, starting with Moses and the prophets, he opened the scriptures to them and showed them how the whole thing was about him.
Wow. Bob,
so it's a strong
honestly,
story.
I honestly, you and I are very close. We talk a lot about the scripture. We talked about this briefly before we started this podcast, and I would have never drawn the correlation between the two at all. And that is...
That's what's going on.
That is what's going on.
Yeah. We had a good friend years ago, and we talked about him in church this morning. We didn't tell you this part of his story. Joseph Chanco,
mm-hmm.
that helped build the bridge in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
He was a young man when he passed away, 27 or 28 or so, right in there. And he died snowboarding in East Valley. He had an enlarged heart, and something happened going down those chutes. And I had never met his family. And we had to do the funeral back home, so I went to Pennsylvania to meet his family and help with his funeral. And you can imagine a guy who was this great, but honestly, any child. I mean, it just happened to be that this guy was that great. So in addition to being, you know, your son, he's also a great son. And meeting his father for the first time over this issue, and his dad, Bud, he didn't talk for 2 hours as we sat on either side of their kitchen table, and you just wept, and how could you do anything else, you know?
Right.
So what could I do except sit there and be part of the moment? And his very first words to me when he could collect himself were this, literally: who is God the Father that he gave his son? Because that was the pain.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Hey, I understand Jesus suffered on it, but the Father's suffering is unimaginable.
Intense as well. You know, to use the same word. Bob, you just opened a new door for me personally that I really need to pray upon. Not pray upon, pray on.
To consider. Yeah.
Yeah, to consider. Yeah. I really do. Because that understanding, when you put it in that context, wow. Wow. And here's Abraham. He's there. He's gonna do it, not only ready to do it, I mean he prepares to do it. The story tells about how he prepared.
No resistance.
None.
In the text, there's no resistance.
Prepared the donkey, put his son on there. And what I thought was interesting was there was never any question from his son.
Other like, than, hey, where's the
right?
Where's the lamb?
Right.
And you're the lamb.
Yeah. Well, God, he said God will provide the lamb.
That's right.
Right.
So there's something going on. He, you can tell he perceives a bigger picture.
Isaac is yeah. And how old is Isaac right here? You know, do we?
I don't know.
9.
Old
10?
Enough to converse and understand the situation. You know, hey, we're going to do a sacrifice. So he, I don't know.
And the ram, any significance?
The lamb, it's a lamb, lamb, same thing in there. So yeah, the lamb, God's going to provide it.
Speechless, Bob.
Yeah, I know. That's,
you know, when
it's the
when,
only way to read that chapter is
when
speechless.
When you brought the correlation between what God did with his son for us, each and every, not only the people listening on this podcast, every human being that is created in the image of God on the planet.
Yeah. Yeah, and to remember last podcast, you know, your friend said, oh, I'm not worthy. Yes, you are.
According to who?
Part of what they're saying, though they don't realize it, is you're minimizing the sacrifice of Christ when you say you're not worthy.
In a backhanded sense,
yes. And they don't realize that, but yeah, that's theologically, you're making about as big a mistake as you could make. So
speechless,
Bob. You know what's called for in a chapter like this is for us and for any listener is you just kind of close the book and as you're imagining either walking with your father through the forest and he's showing you the path or you're sitting in the living room chair with him, either one, you close the book and you just look at him and you just go, man.
Intense.
All my chips are in.
And it's an intense relationship. Here's
another way to say it, Jimmy. That's right.
Yeah.
Here's another way to say it. For me, it's not God's holiness that scares me. You know, though that is frightening. You know, his punishment of sin and so on. His love scares me more than his holiness.
That scares
me.
You?
A guy that would not spare Jesus for, you know, me the sinner, that scares me. Because I know he will never leave me alone. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go off. Hey, I'm gonna just leave me alone for a while. You know, Lord, let me in my own room. I'm gonna pursue my sin, you know, alone. I'll come out in a day or two. He's going to knock on that door. As soon as I close the door, he's going to knock and say, no, I'm not going to let you alone. If you're going to sin, I'm going to be right with you. I'm not going to participate in it, but I will never leave you alone. And that guy, that really scares me.
Well, and I think it scares most of the listeners. You know, for myself, I, you know, there's a when you're comparing God and His Son and what He gave with His Son. And now we have the picture, or today we're talking about the picture of Abraham with his son Isaac. Abraham and Isaac puts it in a little more personal.
It's more tangible.
Yes. And when you realize that through Abraham and Isaac, through that story, through that narrative, what God actually did,
what he wouldn't let Abraham actually do.
And wouldn't let him, yes.
But what he actually would do. That's right.
how can we not? I mean, you don't have to read through the rest of the Bible to understand why you should respect and obey.
And God's words were fear. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Now I know that you fear me. Those were his words.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I said God's love is actually what scares me about him more than his holiness.
I don't know if I'm going to sleep tonight, Bob. That's
right. Now, back to the original question. Would you do what God asks?
Yes.
Even if you, that's right. That's the answer. I know it's intense, but the answer is yes. It's not 51-49, you know, it's not. It's yes, I would. Knowing who that person is, yes, I would.
Yeah, understanding the relationship that I have with him. If he asked me to do that, yes.
Yes, I would. That's right. As bizarre as it seems, but I know that guy, and I'll do whatever that guy says, no matter what.
Wow,
so,
Bob.
At the beginning of this, you know, you're reluctant, right? You're, oh, man.
Well, and
I don't
remember,
know.
I'm,
Bob,
I'm
you're
not
pushing
a...
me. You're pushing me, and I'm like, I know I am, but it's because I know what I'm pushing
right.
you towards. And once you get to what I'm telling you, pushing you towards, you'll know that answer is yes. It's not an equivocation. It's yes, I would.
Well, and
that's the cosmic battle. See, what happens...
Yes, it is.
Right? That
yes,
was,
it is.
In a sense, you had the... You know, we talk about baseball, mm-hmm. just for mm-hmm. analogies. You had the first cleanup hitter come up. And a devil's pitcher. And he's had a guy or two get on base, but he struck out most of the guys. Noah got on base. You know what
mm-hmm.
I mean?
Right.
All of a sudden, you had this guy come up to hit a home run.
And Noah, I think, scored a run. He didn't just get on base.
No, Noah got
run.
On and then scored. But you just had a guy, Abraham, hit a home run off the devil. And
wow,
if you want to play that game, which, do you want to? You're in the game.
You're in the game.
you're not on the bench. You are in, and you're at the plate. What are you going to do?
Well, I think the big thing that it raised for me is that he sacrificed his son. You know, and which we've talked about, Son of God, God the Son, same.
Yeah, switch
deal,
the terms. Yeah.
Right. But still, his son.
Yeah. Yeah, either way, it's son.
Right. Right. I never saw the echo. I've 43 years, Bob. I have not, and I have read this before.
Sure,
this isn't my first time reading this particular, you know, part of the Bible. Never saw it before. Never drew that correlation. Never understood the foreshadowing in God's
yeah.
masterpiece that he wrote here.
Well, to pinpoint it, who's that lamb?
Jesus.
All right. Well,
mm-hmm.
God says, hey, look over there, and there's this lamb caught in the...
Mm-hmm.
That's him.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we are going to do a sacrifice, but it'll be my son.
It'll be my son, not yours. But I just wanted to know, are you in or not?
Yeah.
Are you there? Are you there? Intense.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, if I was Abraham at the end of that day, I'd have had to sit quiet for at least 3 days. At least. To even get a grasp of what just happened to me. Because he was not only, well, he was tested, it says. He was put to the test.
Yeah, in verse 15, then the angel of the Lord called to Abraham a second time from heaven. And he said, by myself I have sworn. So that's not God just saying, okay, I'm going to do this. That's him raising his right hand, crossing his chest, you know, stick a needle in my eye, hope it, right? That's him going, whoa, okay, here we go. I am 100% behind you. That's his guy. And
incredible.
The whole, and imagine him saying, you know, in the rest of this, right? Whoever blesses you, I will bless. In you, all the earth, all the nations on earth will be blessed. Everything comes through Abraham. And so, you know, you step outside that just for a second to today's time, and you turn on the news, and there's all the nations in the world ready to jump on Israel. And you're going, you guys, that is the exact opposite of what you ought to be doing.
Try it. See how it works.
Yeah. And then that's the channel of your blessing. Don't pinch off the channel.
Now, what is the... I know we counted them. There's 12. What is the point of pointing out Nahor's...
At that time?
Yeah.
Well, because Sarah's going to die in the next chapter, and Isaac needs a wife, and he's going to get it from Nahor. Rebecca is going to be
Abraham's brother, right?
Yeah, that's right. Nahor's his brother. That's so. It's setting up the genealogy again, the seed. So, you know, that part almost goes with the next chapter more. The chapter divisions, but you know, as you recall, those weren't put in by Moses.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So after the God reaffirms the covenant in even stronger terms, okay, that's the stopping point. And then, okay, you get this genealogy, you know, the seed, the line continues.
Well, and am I right in thinking, Bob, that the covenant that you just brought up, that's kept from this point on with man?
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
God...
The Abrahamic covenant, that's right.
It's kept. You know, now, did we keep the covenant?
Yeah, you're raising the issue of the covenants, and that's a big discussion. The Abrahamic covenant is the backbone from which the other covenants are...
Right, established.
...are established upon this one. So the new covenant, the Palestinian covenant, the Mosaic is alongside, but the other three covenants are all branches off this one. The Mosaic covenant is alongside for different purpose. We'll have to spend a podcast on the covenants.
But am I on the right track that, you know, it's pretty much the same covenant now that it was?
Oh, those... That's like asking me, hey, Bob, is that the same spine you had when you were born? Yeah. Yeah, there's only one spine.
Same deal, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And I think it's, you know, I know that it's important for me to understand. And I know this was eye-opening to me. And I really hope our listeners understand, you know, why we're spending so much time on Genesis. You know, why are we spending, you know, a lot of time on the foundation of where the whole belief came from.
Yeah, you've seen houses go up mm-hmm. in the Vale Valley, right? They spend mm-hmm. the majority of their time on that foundation. Once the framing starts, like right out this window, the come and go that's going mm-hmm. up there, you could, and daily, you can see that thing
yep.
being built. But you didn't see them digging the hole, you didn't see them laying the foundation
right.
upon which all of that is built. So, Genesis functions as a foundation for the rest of the scriptures. We were talking between the podcasts about, of the 66 books of the Bible, you know, say you were stranded on a desert island, and you could only take 5 of them with you, 5 of the 66 books, which ones would you take? And I instantly said, I'd take Genesis, number 1.
Genesis, definitely.
I mean, that's the... Everything comes out of that. And I personally take Romans, Revelation, Genesis, Romans, Revelation, Gospel of John, and then probably Ephesians for me. But those are, you know, that's foundational for me. Those books of the Bible set the stage for everything else. And other people could pick other books, but Genesis would have to be one of them.
With my love for David, it'd be hard not to take the Psalms.
Yeah, okay.
I'd really have love and respect, I should say, for David.
Mm-hmm. Proverbs would be hard to issue as well, given that they're basically from David, because they're from Solomon. What Solomon says, essentially, I learned these from my father, David. But and in one sense, it's a silly question, you know, which of the books of the Bible could you take?
All of them.
But in a sense, you understand what we're saying. Genesis is crucial to understanding the rest of the Bible, which is why I often tell people, hey, you're going to start in Genesis. And in a sense, I understand there are shortcuts. You know, okay, start with Matthew or one of the Gospels. We often say John or so on. I get that, and I understand why people would tell other people that. But if the Spirit of God is in control of the whole thing, and He wants you to know the whole story, why wouldn't you start from the beginning? I don't know. But I understand why we answer the way we do.
Well, and all I can share with our listeners, Bob, is a quote from you, I guess, is what it would be. But when we first met and you asked me if I'd ever read the Bible, and I shared with you that I was raised in a Catholic faith, and I had a general understanding of the Bible, you know, I knew what it was doing, and your response was, have you ever read it? Had to respond honestly and said no, not cover to cover. And you recommended that I start reading it from the beginning.
That's right.
And life-changing, Bob. Life-changing. You know, understanding who Jesus is big point. Big medicine, as we say. But if you don't
have a context for that, yeah, that's right.
You know, I would have, yeah. I'm speechless, and you know me well. How many times have you heard me speechless?
Never.
You know that I really, you know, this one has really, you know, in a sense, slapped me across the face with realization of what is actually being talked about here. What Abraham did and what God not only was willing to do, but did years later.
Then it makes that question, you know, would you do this? Then the answer is yes, I would, because I understand what God did.
And maybe, but intense.
Maybe, yeah, oh, none intense, no doubt, but the answer is yes. And without seeing it in that context, it's, man, I don't know. I don't know really means no, I wouldn't. I understand what's on the table, but I don't think I could do that. That's what I don't know means.
Mm-hmm.
Yes means yes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know means no.
Intense, Bob. I can't put it in any other words than that. And I think it's my favorite time of the podcast, because I have nothing more to say than I need to go home and hug and love my kids and hug my wife and get on my knees and say thank you to God, you know, for everything that He has blessed us with, and that He has not put us in the same position that He put Abraham in and that He put Himself in.
That's right. So let's pray. Lord, we sit before you now
awesome silence.